walk in the world, look up and down. Mm-hmm. There are ways to be kind all around, all around.
All around. We help the world when we help someone.
Do what you can to make things right. Tikkun Olam.
We help the world when we help someone.
Do what you can to make things right.
Tikkun Olam.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And I'm now joined by Jeremy Ben-Ami, who is the president of J Street, a political home for pro-Israel, pro-peace Americans who believe that a two-state solution is essential to Israel's survival. He has worked for 25 years in government, politics, and communications in the United States and in Israel. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeremy Ben-Ami.
Thanks so much, Ian.
And you were in Israel on last Wednesday, appearing before a committee of the Knesset, which I believe was quite rancorous, the meeting. My impression from the press coverage in the New York Times suggested that it was a little reminiscent of the House of Un-American Activities in terms of questioning the witnesses' patriotism. Is that a fair description?
Right. It would be if the House Un-American Affairs Committee had then gone ahead and questioned Russians. You know, that's the other thing that makes this doubly outrageous, is that they were not simply questioning Israelis who love Israel. They were questioning people from another country about whether or not they love their country enough. And it's certainly something that had never been done before in the Knesset, and was thoroughly beyond the bounds of the usual American-Israel relationship.
And this appears to be incredibly ironic that this is happening at a time when the entire landscape in the Middle East is shifting towards a more hopeful and democratic future, and young Arabs are bravely putting their lives on the line for freedom, and they're dying in Libya. You've seen pictures, Jeremy, of these kids, off the streets fighting in a war. So how come the region's only democracy, Israel, their right wing, is saying no to freedom of thought and freedom of opinion?
Well, you know, there is definitely a troubling trend that is happening in Israel, and perhaps it is, in a sense, in reaction to fear and insecurity about the wave of change that is happening in the region. But certainly the right wing in Israel is narrowing in on itself. It is trying to constrain the definitions of who counts as a Jew by the laws of Israel, count as a citizen of the state of Israel by imposing loyalty oaths. Now they're trying to limit who counts as a friend of the state of Israel by imposing a political litmus test on our political views. So it's definitely a troubling trend. I don't think it reflects the broader Israeli public. I don't think it reflects the state and its history of 63 years, but it does reflect a right-wing faction that at the moment is ascendant in the Knesset and in the present government.
But surely, Jeremy Ben-Ami, this whatever's happening in the Middle East, we don't know whether it's going to lead to a flourishing democracies in the region or reactionary theocracies. But the status quo of this recycled historical pain and competing victimhood between Israel and Palestine is going nowhere. And it's surely whatever's going to happen in the future can't be worse than the present.
Right. The status quo is absolutely unsustainable. And I think there are many in Israel who recognize that the time has come for the creation of an independent Palestinian state, a resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with two states side by side and borders based on, the 1967 Green Line with some adjustments for settlement blocks. But it is time for this conflict to end. The status quo will not hold, and you have to be on the right side of history. And if the Israeli public and this government don't make this decision soon, then they're going to face the United Nations, they're going to face the international community that's going to decide for them and isolate the state and the people of Israel in a very unfortunate manner, perhaps as early as this fall.
Again, I'm speaking with J Street President Jeremy Ben-Ami, who on Wednesday appeared before a committee of the Knesset in Israel convened by the hawkish Likud legislator Danny Danon, where the very purpose of J Street, which is to give representation to a broader group of American Jews in terms of their support for Israel, was questioned. And I must say, again, it feels a bit like what they're doing in the Knesset is a bit like what the Republicans have done here with NPR. I mean, it's sort of just as ideologically driven. Am I correct?
Yeah, you know, it is very much a political witch hunt, and there are some very troubling politics about what is happening in Israel. I mean, at the same time that you've got the right-wing Knesset looking at J Street, you have right-wing funders like Sheldon Adelson or Irving Moskowitz who are buying up and pushing Israeli media to the right, the way that Rupert Murdoch is doing it with Fox. Adelson is doing it similarly in Israel. This man, Moskowitz, who owns bingo parlors in L.A., I believe, as well as elsewhere, he is buying a property that belongs to Arabs in East Jerusalem in this deliberate effort to torpedo the possibility of sharing the city as a capital for both people. So you've got all these right-wing American activists who are undermining the chances for peace and security, yet the Knesset is turning its spotlight on those of us who are trying to actually achieve a peaceful and a secure future for the state of Israel and the national home of the Jewish people.
So, Jeremy Ben-Ami, am I correct in suggesting, just yesterday I spoke with the filmmakers of Miral, a new film by Julian Schnabel, and his new girlfriend who wrote the screenplay, and the book is based upon her autobiography. And much of what's happening in response to the film is sort of similar to what we're talking about. You know, in other words, how dare a Jew in any way profess any support for the Palestinians or a different way to understand and deal with Palestinians. Have you seen the film?
It's a terrible thing that both sides, you know, and I don't exempt the Palestinians from this either, that both sides too often look at this as a prism of us versus them and look for a, you know, sort of zero-sum solution, when in reality the only way forward here is to recognize that there's elements of truth to the narratives on both sides. Everybody has had their share of suffering. The only way forward is to find some way of compromise and sharing the land and find a win-win compromise that gives everybody something. And it really doesn't help when the folks in the Jewish community or the folks in the Palestinian American community don't want to hear from people who dissent from what they think is a black and white point of view. We're only going to get somewhere if we have an open and a broad discussion. J Street is dedicated to that. We just had a wonderful national conference, and we had lots of people who disagree with us take the stage and talk, because we think it's so important to have a vibrant and a broad discussion, and terrible disservice to democracy and to our kids and the future if we don't allow this conversation to take place.
And Jeremy Ben-Ami, the recent release of the Palestinian Papers by Al Jazeera, I think, have indicated a total failure on the part of the Palestinians. No, you know, if you've been at this negotiation for 30 years and gotten nowhere, clearly you're not doing a very good job. And I imagine that some of what's happening in the broader Middle East is affecting the young Palestinians in terms of their sense of getting rid of these ossified old men that have been ruling them for so long. Is there any sense in Israel of a generational shift? Because my impression, and you just alluded to it earlier, that the country is moving actually further to the right than it is getting more liberal and progressive.
Well, you know, I will say I don't know that it's as much a political shift on a spectrum of right to left. What I think has happened in Israeli society is that people have lost confidence and hope, and that's not really a political value on the right or the left. An overwhelming majority of Israelis still understand rationally that the conflict will only end in a two-state solution, but an overwhelming majority of Israelis no longer believe in the Palestinians and no longer believe that it's actually possible to reach that deal. And that lack of faith is what needs to be addressed. And it's not a right or a left issue. It's really an issue of credibility and trust. And that's, I believe, where the United States and the international community has such a critical role to play, because without an outside mediator and without outside assistance, neither of these sides has the trust in each other or the political credibility to bring this conflict to an end.
But as you mentioned earlier, Jeremy Ben-Ami, that if you've got the equivalence of Rupert Murdoch's buying up the media, Adelson and the fellow that funds the settlers, that has a bicycle club casino here in Los Angeles, Irving Moskowitz, if they're they're presumably pushing the country to the right. And I recall recently that Bill Clinton stepped in a bit of a hornet's nest by suggesting that Israel was moving to the right because the new influx of settlers from immigrants from Russia tend to be right-wing, having lived under a socialist, corrupt socialist regime. So do you think that Clinton was onto something there?
Well, you know, I don't know that there isn't also a growing shift among some of the younger Russians to be totally integrated within Israeli society. You know, that wave of immigration ended 15 years ago. The kids that are growing up, you know, have grown up in Israel, in the army. I mean, I think we might be past the point where we can blame a rightward shift on an immigration wave that happened 15 to 20 years ago. And, you know, I don't want to put all the blame here on one side. I think it's very important to recognize that both sides have their problems. I think you talked earlier about a leadership that can't deliver, and I think that's true not simply in Israel, but also, you know, on the Palestinian side. And we need to be very careful to recognize that, you know, pinning the blame only on one side is also not going to advance the ball. And we need an honest broker in the part of the U.S., and we need the international community to weigh in here and put pressure on both parties to act in their best interests and in the interests of the larger region and world.
Well, clearly, Jeremy Benamy, that's always been a problem, is to deliver the Palestinians or get the Palestinians to deliver themselves. And as we know, they are divided with Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. But Secretary of Defense Gates was just in Israel, and I thought what he was saying was essentially a warning that as the Middle East becomes more democratic, a new political landscape will provide both a challenge and an opportunity for Israel. And as these decrepit kleptocratic regimes of colonels, princes, and potentates who've used hostility towards Israel to distract their populations from their plunder, as they're toppled one by one, the lie is exposed.
Right, and you know, the question that we raise as friends of Israel, you know, I mean, my family's been in Israel for 130 years. My father was born there. My grandparents were founders of Tel Aviv. You know, I've lived in Israel. I'm deeply committed to the country. What J Street is saying as a friend of Israel to Israelis is this is in your interest. This isn't a favor to anyone. This isn't a favor to President Obama. It's not a favor to the Palestinians. This is your existential security need to resolve this conflict, to bring it to an end now, and get out ahead of this curve. And I think that's what Secretary Gates was essentially saying, is, you know, you've got to seize this moment. Time is really running out.
Well, I think, in fact, what the Secretary of Defense was saying was that if Israel doesn't deal with the Palestinians justly and honestly, then another big lie will be exposed, and that is that Israel's not serious about peace. I thought it was a real challenge that he was issuing there.
Right. I mean, you know, our view as J Street is that it's time for the president and this administration that Secretary Gates is a part of to move beyond this jawboning and move beyond just simply, you know, laying out the challenge, but to actually lay out the solution. We all know what a two-state solution looks like. We know the parameters. We know the principles. And it's time for the president of the United States to put that out there and say to both sides, to call both of their bluffs, you know, the Israeli serious when Netanyahu says he wants a two-state solution, will he accept the internationally accepted principles of a two-state solution? And same goes for the Palestinians, for the PA and Mahmoud Abbas and Salam Fayyad. Ask them both. Put the principles on the table and say, I want a yes or no answer to the internationally accepted principles that would resolve this conflict.
Again, I'm speaking with J Street President Jeremy Benamy, who appeared before a Knesset committee last Wednesday in Israel, where the very nature of J Street, the liberal alternative, if you will, to AIPAC, was questioned by some of the conservative lawmakers in Israel. But given what happened recently with the veto of the UN resolution, which a number of American former senior foreign policy officials, and I believe J Street was, what position did you take on that?
We said the president should not veto.
Oh, you said he so there you took the same position as these American diplomats. What explains that, though? I mean, it seems to me that the more cynical and perhaps realistic thing is that the Obama and the Democrats are looking at this next election. They've already lost the money from Wall Street, and they don't want to lose support from AIPAC. Is that the explanation?
Well, there could very well be some element of this that is political, and that's why we created J Street, you know, to show that there's a very large portion of Jewish Americans and other friends of Israel who would provide political support to a president and to politicians who actually stand up for Israel's long-term future by standing up for peace, for standing up for a two-state solution and assertive diplomacy. But I think, you know, another part of it is when and if you decide that you're really going to put yourself out there when it comes to Israel and it comes to the question of how to resolve this conflict, do you do it over a UN resolution that is simply about a symptom, which the settlements are, you know, not the underlying problem. They are a symptom of the problem. Or if you're going to put your political capital into the center of the table and bet it all, do you bet it on a full-scale resolution of the conflict where you lay out borders and you lay out answers to the tough issues? I would hope that in their political calculus, they've decided that it wasn't worth a huge political fight over a UN resolution just around the settlements, but that if and when they're going to have the fight, they'll do it around the resolution of the entirety of the conflict.
But there was something particularly sort of almost absurd and certainly hypocritical about the U.S. vetoing that last resolution, because they were vetoing their own stated policy. And it seems to me that they, in doing so, they squandered what's left of their leverage and credibility in this so-called peace process.
Well, it certainly was a blow to American credibility, and I've said that, you know, publicly, to veto policy that you are in favor of. I do want to clarify, though, that the resolution did go well beyond the Obama administration's policy and the policy of the last five presidents. The United States has not called the settlements illegal since 1978. So it's been 33 years and five presidents. And in choosing to veto this resolution, that is a very significant difference from existing American policy versus what was in that UN Security Council resolution. So even though we did not support the veto, I do think it's important to recognize they had a solid rationale for why they were vetoing it.
Well, it certainly does seem that we're in for a fairly the opposite of hopeful is hopeless.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, but I don't see any movement. I mean, do you?
Well, it is clear that the UN vote in September is going to be a forcing, you know, it forces the agenda. And something has to happen that changes the game between now and September. There's a lot going on, obviously, in the region. I mean, there's everything from, you know, the unrest now spreading to Syria, to Hamas Fatah talks, to an escalation in violence from Islamic Jihad. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on. But sometimes these sort of crises moments are really when you can make an opportunity. And that if you step forward with a way out from a moment, just as it looks the darkest, you reach the dawn. And so our hope is that this is really, you know, these next few months do in fact provide an impetus and a moment that everybody looks over the brink and says, we've just got to pull back and find the right path to a secure future.
Well, just in closing, Jeremy Ben-Ami, do you think, though, that what's really going on here is more to do with right-wing politics than anything else? I mean, since there's such a similarity between what's happening with the Likud intransigence and what the Republicans are now doing here. And as we speak in Israel today, there are some major pro-labor demonstrations. And I believe that Israel is now only second to the United States in the disparity of the wealth in terms of the richest, smaller group of rich getting richer and the broader public, you know, either standing still or getting poorer. You know, that's, remember, Israel was originally a kind of a socialist paradise. So give me a sense in closing whether we're talking about this, a similar kind of political trajectory that we're on and they're on.
Well, I do think that there is a parallel in the rise of a radical right, and it is apparent not simply in Netanyahu's own party, but far to his right. You know, Netanyahu looks positively moderate and centrist compared to some of the, you know, politicians that we were talking to in the Knesset last Wednesday. And the rise of some of those forces is, you know, comparable to some of the politics here in this country, where you've seen, you know, sort of a grassroots explosion of some of the Tea Party and other Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and Mike Huckabee and others who are warmly embraced when they go to Israel. So I do think there are parallels with the right-wing politics. But at the end of the day, I do believe that in this country, Barack Obama will be reelected, that the majority of people in this country remain centrist and center-left. Progressives, and similarly in Israel, the Kadima Party, which is the centrist party, is the largest party in Israel, and that there will be a resurgence there as well on the center-left. And ultimately, that is where both countries' future lies, and these are moments where the pendulum has swung a little out of joint with public opinion and will come back towards the center.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us today in Los Angeles, Jeremy Benamy.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeremy Benamy, who is the president of J Street, a political home for pro-Israel, pro-peace Americans who believe that a two-state solution is essential to Israel's survival. He has worked for 25 years in government, politics, and communications in the United States and in Israel. So today we segued out of President Obama's address to the nation on Libya. We started out with Aaron David Miller, a Middle East advisor to six secretaries of state. He seemed to think that the president still has a contradiction there, which is fairly inherent, but didn't seem to think, in other words, a contradiction between not wanting regime change, which he criticized in the Iraq case, but also somehow thinking that the opposition can get rid of Gaddafi, which is, he has always stated, is a necessary goal for the country to move on. He seemed to think that that would create problems further down the track. I suggested perhaps that nobody much in the country has any time for Gaddafi, and the sons have plundered the place. And he said, well, I hope you're right, but I'm not sure you are. David Rothkopf, who followed him, was far, far more critical. He had a piece recently that he wrote for foreignpolicy.com called Thanks for Clarifying That, the Knowns and Unknowns of White House Libya Policy. He thinks that the policy is still incoherent and extremely selective. If, as the president said, that it was in our national security interest not to allow people to be massacred in Benghazi. However, every day people are massacred in the Congo and we don't do anything about it. And that selectivity continues. And he was extremely critical of what he saw as an incoherent and open-ended policy that, in the end, he thinks that the failure to act, as the president said, that we couldn't afford not to act, and acting was in our national interest. He argued that the results may well end up being not in our national interest in terms of a protracted conflict, Gaddafi still in power, and a civil war in Libya. The third form of senior official was Assistant Secretary of State of Defense during the Reagan administration, Lawrence Korb. He seemed to think that Obama was on the right track and that this will end up being a successful mission, if you will, not like the one that he was involved in when Reagan bombed Gaddafi. He said that was in direct response to the killing of Americans. In this case, he said it really is, as stated, a humanitarian intervention with a military component, and that eventually this will work out and that the fractures and divisions within NATO aren't a big deal. And then we turn to the subject of the Israel lobby and the alternative lobby here in the United States, J Street. The founder and president of J Street, Jeremy Benamy, was hauled before a kind of star chamber in the Israeli Knesset last Wednesday, which was a bit like the House of Un-American Activities. But in this case, his entire loyalty to Israel and the need for unconditional support was called into question by the Likud chairman of this Knesset committee, who called for J Street to be labeled pro-Palestinian, to be purged of its anti-Zionist elements, and accused the and also called for no Israeli official to have any contact with them, and accused the organization of being full of self-doubting Jews. He gave a very, a very interesting analysis of the politics of Israel at the moment, even though it is moving to the right wing and to the right. And he did point out that there is a kind of Rupert Murdoch factor going on in Israel now, where these big supporters of the settlements, like Adelson, the casino owner in Las Vegas, and Moscovich, the casino owner here in Los Angeles, they've been pushing both settlements, and Adelson's been buying up media like and moving it to the right, like Murdoch does in this country. But nevertheless, he seemed to think that at the end of the day, there would be some kind of changes due largely to the extraordinary changes taking place in the Middle East that would eventually bring about a recognition in Israel that they have more to hope and less to fear from what's going on in the neighborhood. On a more somber note, news reached us today that Joe Bagent has died. Joe Bagent spoke on this program numerous times. His book, Deer Hunting with Jesus, gave remarkable insight into America's class struggles. His wit and wisdom will be sorely missed by us all. Alan Minsky, you have a word to say here?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to encourage people out there to check out Joe Bagent's writings. I just want to say, because I got this news, it made me very sad. I want to thank Ian Masters and the team Background Briefing for introducing me to Joe Bagent and also the listeners of Southern California to his work. I had a series recently, Building a Powerful Left. He was on my short list of people I wanted to interview. I heard he was very sick. He had come down with cancer. But I think the thing I can just say is really encourage people to get his book, Deer Hunting with Jesus. Read his recent articles that were largely up on counterpunch.org. He had amazing insight into the society we live in, and he'll be sorely missed. Thank you, Ian.
And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You may hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I've also started a daily blog there called at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again tomorrow for Background Briefing. Bye for now. An angel song about the home of the brave in this land here.